From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 30th installment of our conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the history of the USSR, and in particular, we've been talking about the ideological history of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, for sure.
That's right. Good morning, Don.
Good morning.
So, I think today we can sum up an answer, or sum up the question, what is Trotskyism, ideologically?
Right. Good question.
Now, I'll say, from the studies, from the research, that Trotskyism possesses three specific features which contradict Leninism and want to prove or show or indicate that therefore Trotskyism is not Leninism. And this is a very important concept, a very important observation for those people who come to revolution in America through Trotskyism, not knowing, they're genuine. People who go to Trotskyism here, who are gathered by the Trotskyist Party, are genuine. I mean, they want change. There's nothing wrong with that. But they have to realize that it's not Leninism, no matter what they say. They have to read something other than Trotsky and check, which I understand is not always the case, that not much else is read but Trotsky himself. And this is not a comparative method.
That's right.
This is not a way of checking against contradictions.
That's absolutely, here's the contradiction at the head end of it, which Stalin wrote about, certainly, and even Lenin posited, which is, if Trotskyism were Leninism, what would be the need for the term Trotskyism, since it's not distinct from Leninism and that term already existed?
That's exactly right. it must be contradictory. It must contradict something in Lenin.
Right.
And
right.
Here we go. The three features. The three features that Trotskyism possesses that we argue contradict Leninism are the following: the theory of permanent revolution, which we will define, a distrust of the party, meaning the party of the revolution, the party that then led the Soviet Union, the Bolshevik Party, a distrust of the party. And the third is the distrust of the leaders. So let's go with permanent revolution.
Permanent
revolution. Well, what is permanent revolution in its Trotskyist interpretation?
Well, first, it doesn't include the peasants. Right. It doesn't include the peasants.
In Stalin's view, and in Stalin was to Lenin what Engels was to Marx. A faithful lieutenant, a disciple, although Engels himself had, added to Marx, and so did Stalin.
So did Stalin.
But anyway, sorry, what?
Yeah, so did Stalin. I mean, Stalin added decades of praxis, by the way.
Right.
And a constant reinterpretation.
And he developed socialism in one country, which was a theory in Lenin, that it's possible, in fact necessary, and contrary to what the Trotskyists say, but, don't want to go into too wide a spectrum here. So let's see what this permanent revolution is. It is a revolution that fails to take the poor peasantry into account as a revolutionary force. Trotsky's permanent revolution is, as Lenin said, skipping the peasant movement. Why is this dangerous? Because such a revolution would inevitably have ended in failure.
Right.
For it would have divorced from the Russian proletariat its ally, the poor peasantry.
Yep.
This explains the struggle that Leninism has been waging against Trotskyism ever since 1905, says Stalin. Yep. So, you were going to say something.
Yeah, and what's it's interesting because that's exactly the phenomenon that also it guaranteed the success of China's revolution. Because that was, and as a matter of fact, that revolution was organized in the countryside, closing in on the cities, and with an uprising of the urban proletariat towards the end.
Yeah, and look at what, supposing Trotsky had been the leader of the Bolshevik Revolution and had said, all power to the proletariat.
Mm.
You had 80% peasants in Russia, and among these peasants, there were at least three classes.
Right.
And the kulaks would have rebelled, as they did. The middle ones would not have known where to go. They would have gone with the strongest or the one there. And the poor ones would have been left bereft.
Right.
So the point was to gather the peasants into the fold. They were not proletarians. They were not prepared. They were not educated to Marxism. And this also points to the fact that every revolution has contradictions, class contradiction, antagonistic and not antagonistic.
Right.
And these forces, I mean, society of millions of people, everything has to be brought in so that you can then have proletarian state power after you don't begin with a permanent revolution of the proletariat.
That's right.
You make it along the way. You make it by industrializing the country. You make it by starting schools. Everything that Stalin did in socialism in one country. You know, you make it. It's a process. You don't begin at the beginning.
Right.
Here is the proletariat state, and we have the proletariat revolution.
Right.
What are you going to do with millions of people who have no idea what this is,
right,
who are threatened because they're going to take away the land?
And you know, for a lot of people, as a matter of fact, for the very class that is supposed to be the most advanced, you know, sector in society, the proletariat, they're the ones who have the most at risk, because A, they have some benefits as an industrial proletariat, and B, they're precarious because they are a proletariat. And so what you're asking them to do is say, well, you know what, that job that you have that you go to every day, let's go on strike and take over the factory, and maybe we can build a socialist society. Maybe you won't have a paycheck next week either. And maybe the state will come along and carry you off to prison.
Yeah, and let's say the peasants decide not to produce grain.
Right.
How is this?
Now what?
How is the urban and you make divisions between urban and country.
Right.
That's one of the most dangerous things to do.
Of course it is, yep.
So then you don't get food to the cities. The proletariat is 5%, the peasantry is 80%, and you're going to have a permanent revolution ipso facto
on the day that
the revolution is. This is idealist thinking. This is not dialectical.
It's not scientific.
This is not dialectical thinking, which is based on change.
Right. That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. So let's figure out what Marx said, according to quoted, you know, summarized by Stalin. What Marx said about permanent revolution in 1850 or 51, after the defeat of the 48 revolution. So Marx did not at all propose to begin the revolution, he was talking about Germany, of the 1850s with the immediate establishment of proletarian power.
But how would you do it? How would you do it?
I don't know. It's
by what mechanism?
It's a diktat.
Right. Yep.
You declare, you have, and then you go on vacation?
Right.
Everything's
going
to be all right?
Right. You go read it at the steps of, you know, some government building, and then everybody says, "Oh, okay, no problem," and you win.
We have. So what Marx proposed, he proposed that the revolution be crowned by the establishment of proletarian state power. Imagine how much work will go into that. And that means hurling, step by step, one section of the bourgeoisie after another from the height of power. So whatever were the industrialists, the monopolists in Russia, whatever were the rich peasants, all these contrary forces to the revolution had to be either hurled out, or, in the case of the peasants, brought to be a partner in the revolution.
Right.
So in order to attain after, you had to hurl all the reactionary forces out in order, after the attainment of power by the proletariat, that is the seizure of state power, to kindle the fire of revolution in every country. Mm. You begin with your country, and then you kindle the fire of revolution in every country. I mean, Ho Chi Minh, on the colonial question, as early as 1922, listed the problems in Indochina, the vast territory, the different languages, the prejudice, the horrendous repression, the ignorance of the colonials, you know, of the colonized,
right,
the ignorance about Marxism, etc. I mean, it was a tremendous problem.
Yep.
And so, doing a revolution is not a diktat. It's not.
It's not something that you can, you know, submit a declaration to a committee, have them approve it, and then implement by, you know, by reading it aloud.
It's idealism, not in the good sense, but in the philosophical sense.
Right. In the metaphysical sense.
Yeah, in the metaphysical sense. That's right. Things are because, you know, I perceive them as such.
Right.
Now you should all perceive the revolution.
Right.
Okay. Secondly, Trotskyism's distrust of the Bolshevik Party principle,
right,
of the monolithic character of the party, of its hostility toward opportunist element. Trotskyism is distrust of the Bolshevik Party. Now, we've seen this for about 10 programs,
right,
10 conversations. We've illustrated that, that Trotsky was for a non-monolithic party, that
right,
is a pluralistic party of all sorts of elements.
Right.
Anyway, in the sphere of organization, Trotskyism is a theory that revolutionaries and opportunists can coexist and form groups and coterie within a single party. This is the Western idea of a party.
Right. It's a coalition.
Everybody happy.
Yeah, that's right. It's a coalition inside the party. So now, this is different.
But
this is different and distinct from, you know, Leninism, basically. The concept is that you have a core group of revolutionaries that are working on the program of, you know, having
proletarian
a revolution
power, yes,
and attaining power for the class, and then governing from that position and defending that from that position.
Yeah,
and
so you're going to admit Nazis?
Right, no. So first you have people that are all with that specific program. That's one test. They, in turn, are to develop themselves and their skills and their ability in relation to the politics, the power politics, to actually implement these things. That requires, you know, and the system that they use, democratic centralism, is where everybody is informed about what's happening. They sit down, they determine the broad strokes of what happens, and then you have people managing, this is what we have to do. There's no more dissent. We've decided this among ourselves. Now we go do it. That core then leads the revolution, and so you have the peasants, these workers, these people in the military, that mosh that Trotsky envisions as the party is the revolution led by the party that isn't a mosh, that is a skilled, like an officer class, basically, for that war.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, the idea of this anybody can belong, you can see it in the liberal democracies, which I'm most familiar with, right, in Italy. How was the revolution, the social revolution that was implied in the resistance, that was desired in the resistance by at least the Communist and the Socialist Party as well, the Communist Party, how was it thrown back by the formation of by virtue of the American occupation, by the formation of hundreds of parties, the monarchists, yeah, the fascists, the communists, the socialists, the democrats,
right,
the Christian Democrats. This is the idea of a leading revolutionary party? No, this is the arrangement that strangled the revolution, in addition to disarming, right, the communists, etc., and, right, trying to put them outside the law. And finally, you know, as, what's his name? Lately, the former head of Woolsey.
Right.
Woolsey? James Woolsey?
Yes.
The former head of the CIA said, yeah, sure, we destabilized the... we interfere with the Italian election of 1948 so that the communists wouldn't win.
Right.
And where did they have the support? In about 50 other parties.
Right.
Ruling parties, beginning with the Christian Democrats.
That's right.
So this is if you don't have a leading party that preserves the revolution, you don't have a revolution.
That's right. That's exactly
so
right.
Anyway.
So distrust of the party principle itself, of its monolithic character, and of its hostility towards opportunism. That's the second element of Trotskyism.
That's right. That's right. He was against. So as Stalin points out, he points out to something we've discussed, and he says, we are in no doubt, we are no doubt familiar with the history of Trotsky's August Bloc,
right,
in which various groups,
right,
Martovites, he says, or Soviets and liquidators, we talked about those, but you know, various grouplets,
right,
of compromisers and Trotskyites happily cooperated,
right,
even though, you know, they had different opposite goals, liquidators and,
right,
Otsovis, for example.
Right.
Liquidators wanted to cooperate. The Otsovis wanted not to cooperate with,
right,
with the provisional government.
Right.
And they cooperated, pretending... No, well, this was before the provisional government. But anyway, happily cooperated, pretending that they were a real party.
Right.
It is well known that this patchwork party pursued the aim of destroying the Bolshevik Party,
right,
just as I have argued in the Italian example.
Right. This is exactly the point. The point is that Trotsky will organize with everyone else to kill the actual Communist Party.
Yeah.
That's
right.
That's the essential fact.
Isn't that, yeah, I mean, if you take the essential point, you say, well, geez,
yep,
this is counter-revolutionary, you yep know. Well, look up what we are now, where we are now without a leading party.
Yep.
So
then we go to the third point, which is the leaders of the Bolshevik Party are also to be distrusted, discredited, and defamed.
And defamed, exactly. And Stalin adds, I do not know of a single trend in the party that could compare with Trotskyism in the matter of discrediting the leaders of Leninism. This is a man who said he was the heir of Lenin, who said that Lenin appointed him as the leader, as his inheritor. And Stalin continues, or the central institution of the party. For example, Trotsky described Lenin as a professional exploiter of every kind of backwardness in the Russian working class movement.
Okay. Now, I mean, okay, yeah, so, and that's what I'm going to say on the one hand, that about you, and on the other hand, I'm going to say I am a Leninist.
I am your baby.
Right, that's right. You're no good, and I'm following you to the ends of the earth.
That's right. So this is how it works in the West, the Trotsky movement. I don't know whether we even have a Trotsky party. I think the SWP is pretty somnolent. But there are Trotsky's thoughts, because the only thing permitted in the United States, that you cannot be a communist.
Right. Yeah, they don't need Trotsky yet. They whip out Trotsky when you start to see workers and others across the society seriously looking at Marx and communism. Then they whip out Trotsky. But right now, they don't need Trotsky, because right now, the Democratic Party is the left, okay? And liberals are the left. And so Trotsky, compared to them, is actually progressive, even revolutionary, because he at least challenges the assumptions that these others take as a part of their foundational ideology. That is, first, imperialism is just fine. The United States is the exceptional country and should be the global hegemon. And second, socialism is dead. So why would you need Trotsky? And you know, we look at this thing about Trotsky's theory of imperialism, and the question about where he refers to the United States of Europe, that Lenin said, you know, this concept of Trotsky's deeply reactionary substitutes the task of the struggle for socialist revolution with the struggle for the creation of a capitalist federative government. That's the EU. And look at the battle lines in Europe. What do they need Trotsky for? If you're against being in the EU, then you're a reactionary and a racist. And it's, you know, that's where we are. So Trotsky is kind of ahead of the curve at this point in our history.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But as you said at the beginning, the attractiveness of Trotsky, where there is no communism, you know, is that in fact he does talk about revolution, etc.
Right.
He appears attractive.
Right.
He is attractive. So these are the insidious parts.
That's right.
Of the Trotsky legacy.
That's right. I mean, look, particularly now, when you see the conditions that would generate revolution starting to come into place, you have, you know, massive contradictions economically, so that you have, you know, the biggest assemblage of productive capacity in the history of the world, along with global poverty and austerity, when you see a complete loss of confidence, of legitimacy in the institutions and their ability to solve the problems of the societies, being globalized, when you see the conditions that give rise to revolution starting to gather, well, that's when you need to have Trotsky, you know, right there sitting in the chair next to you, because as soon as somebody says revolution and a crowd starts to gather around them, even if it's Bernie Sanders, you need to have somebody there to tell them why the actual revolution isn't something that they can have right now, but rather they should be working on the permanent one, which means the one that will never actually happen. It'll only be in the process of being conducted.
That's right. That's right. So I don't know, you know, I mean, people might have a question of then how come Trotsky, whom Lenin distrusted, who had been an antagonist of the Bolshevik Party, who had been an antagonist of Lenin, how come he came to be in the Bolshevik Revolution? Mm. And Stalin explains that He found himself in the ranks of the Bolsheviks during the October movement. It happened because at that time Trotsky did abandon, Stalin emphasizes, that stuck in trade. That, you know, against the party, against Lenin, he hid it in the cupboard. Had he not performed that operation of, then the real cooperation with him would have been impossible. The theory of the August Bloc, the theory of unity with Mensheviks had already been shattered and right. thrown overboard by the revolution, and we're talking about the revolution of February. For how could there be any talk about unity when an armed struggle was raging between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks right. in October?
That's right.
So Trotsky had no alternative but to admit that this theory was useless. So I think that... I think that the question then comes, we've talked about it already, but what is the purpose of these legends?
Right. Well,
do you have any answer?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because the kernel of it is in what you were just discussing. You have Trotsky saying from, say, 1903 until 1917, unity with the Mensheviks and Bolsheviks, or whenever the split first took place, unity between them. And then in October, you know, in September, whatever, you have, you know, they're in the streets on opposite sides of the barricades. Well, nobody wants to talk about that anymore. That's too stupid and crazy to bother with. So he revives, you know, he comes up with something new. He synthesizes something else. Then now we've got the division of Leninism, and we've got this theory and that theory and blah, blah, blah. So, but Trotsky's still there dishing up the next thing to confuse the issues that are before the working class. The same with the question of the party principle. The old Trotsky, this is, you know, what Stalin is writing about in 1924, the old Trotskyism tried to undermine the party by means of theory and practice of unity with the Mensheviks. That suffers disgrace. So he says, well, you know what, let's... thank you to the old cadres for bringing us where we are. The young party elements now is where the real life and spirit of the revolution is. We should defer to them. And so, you know, the people that have successfully brought us here should now be disregarded. And my nephew over there and his friends in the black jackets, those are the guys we should follow now. You know, that's the kind of thing that goes on. And then the same Stalin writes about on the question of the leaders. And he does the same thing. And Trotsky writes a book on Lenin, and it's a total miscarriage.
That Hitler loves.
Yeah, Hitler loved it. That's right. It's like, you know, it's a joke for anyone that's familiar with the history of it. But this is the kind of thing as history unfolds, and you know, the bourgeoisie, its agents, you know, those that are familiar with our struggle from the enemy's side, need to trot something out, so to speak, to divide the working class and lead those who are going to follow a banner of revolution into a graveyard or gas chamber or falling off the edge of the world. Well, they'll dust off Trotsky, put some new words in his mouth that are market-tested, and there'll be plenty of people that are willing to follow it. This is the thing that we have to really educate people about, how to calculate themselves.
It's interesting that it's in the West where the Trotsky legend operates.
That's right. Which is, of course, perfectly sensible when one considers that the West is the home of the global imperialist system. We have to stop there. We'll pick this up next week. Luciano, we appreciate your time, as always.
My pleasure, Don, as always.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.